On air. Online. On Twitter.
Jennifer Campbell is always on.
Unfiltered, opinionated, and ready to speak her mind at a moment's notice.
This is the Jennifer Campbell Show on 570 News and Rogers TV, Cable 20.
Now, special guest host, Jeff Pickle.
No, there ain't nothing that I gotta prove. You think your words will make me black and blue, but I...
Good morning. Here we are with the Jennifer Campbell Show. Jeff Pickle filling in for Jennifer. I'll be here all week. Happy to be along with the ride with you here. You're tuning in on 570 News. Thanks for listening. Of course, if you're watching on Rogers Cable 20, appreciate you having you along. What a day it's been so far. The last, all 12 of the Thai soccer players now out of the cave. Yes, absolutely. What a miraculous, crazy story that is. I learned this morning that we saw a tweet this morning from the Thai military, from the Thai Navy SEALs, referring to them as the Wild Boars. And we were kind of looking at it like, what do you mean the Wild Boars? But that, I guess, is the soccer team's name. Their soccer team name is the Wild Boars, so they're referring to them as the Wild Boars, which is kind of cool. If you were on, you know, a soccer team and they're referring to you as your team name, I think that was a cool, nice little touch for those. So congratulations to the Wild Boars, and what an amazing story. And I did hear as well that there was, along with all the search and rescue and the support crews, there was also movie producers on scene taking a look. Talking, assuming they're talking to some of the major players there about what's going on. So it seems a little predatory to have a movie producer on scene of this miraculous rescue. But that also means for the rest of us, that's good news that we might be able to see a movie. I would tune in. I would watch it. You take my $12 for a movie ticket. I don't know how they're going to fit Tom Hanks into that story, but whatever he plays, whatever role Tom Hanks is in, I'm sure we'll get him some an Oscar buzz. And we've got a great show for you today. A little later on at 9:30, a very cool study, a report from the Toronto Star about organic milk. Do you drink organic milk? Do you pay the sometimes double price for organic milk? Well, according to this report, you're a fool. An utter fool? We'll get to that coming up at 9:30. Hey, sometimes puns just fall into place. But off the top of the show, I want to talk to you something a little bit closer to home here. Out in Ward 4, out in the Lower Dune area of Kitchener, with the local planning tribunal, the body that replaced the OMB, has sided with city council and residents of that Lower Dune area to reject a large development proposed for that area of mostly single-family homes. The plan called for 6 stacked townhouses with a total of 175 bedrooms in the middle of that area, again, mostly built up of single detached homes, single family homes. The development was designed with the purpose of housing students for the nearby Conestoga College, where finding adequate housing is a bit of an ongoing issue. But in the end, the tribunal said the development did not fit with the neighborhood and did not get approval. It was a controversial issue. Many residents unhappy. The college was weighing in. Of course, city council and city staff took different sides of this. Here to help me talk a little bit more, get a little bit of understanding of what the issues were at play here, is Yvonne Fernandez, Ward 4 City Council with the City of Kitchener. Yvonne, thanks so much for joining me.
You're welcome. Good morning, Jeff.
So this was, I know last year, which it's hard to believe it was already last year that I think we were chatting about this when it first kind of came up and this issue first sparked. It's a pretty controversial development. It's not just, we see most large developments face some backlash from the neighbors, but this one was a little bit different. Can you explain to me why this was, such a controversial issue, this development?
Yeah, well, I think from the residents' perspective and from mine as well, the concern was that 175 bedrooms on a very small piece of property. What we've been seeing is although we know that the proximity to the college is walkable, we're still seeing a lot of students with cars. And even the new buildings, the new Drulo student housing on Old Carriage, they have definitely a problem with the parking. So with 175 buildings, although the developer said, you know, it was needed and these students would be walking, that was one of the issues. The other issue was the height and the setback from the existing houses. I mean, we're looking at quite a mass of a building, and that's not acceptable. And I noted in the decision from Ms. Zumda that she went out and did a site visit, and I'm really glad. This is apparently quite precedent-setting from my understanding from Councillor Yonesky, who's attended and been part of many, many OMB hearings, that she did a site visit, that she, you know, assessed the situation on the ground and the way things really were looking. So I think, you know, those issues were ever present in the community's mind and on my mind as well.
And you brought up a good point as well, something I wanted to talk about a little bit later. But since you brought it up, the fact that this was an LPAT hearing, the Local Planning Appeals Tribunal, which has taken the place of the OMB, I have not personally dealt with many of these hearings since they've taken over from the UMB. And it sounds like there's a sizable difference in the way they kind of conduct themselves. And certainly this outcome is a little different from a lot of the outcomes we saw with the OMB, who you know, seem to be a little bit more sided with the developers.
Yes, and it certainly is refreshing. I mean, this appeal fell under the original OMB, but by the time the hearing was took place, it then had to fall under the new LPAT regulations. And certainly there is an attempt and an effort by this new tribunal to take a look, I think a more holistic look at the appeals and the residents' perspective, which I think is fantastic. Having been part of the group of councillors who worked so hard to get this OMB change, and the province really listened to us, this is a happy day for me. Yeah. It means that the work that we did a couple years ago really was heard, and that's what has to happen. I mean, you already indicated the decisions quite often were leaning towards developers, and I'm glad to see that this chair really did listen to what the residents were saying. It was a really strong, committed group of residents who attended every single day of the hearing, and she noted that in her decision as well.
And I'm recalling now also when we had this discussion again a year ago when this was first kind of brought up, that one of the reasons why it was at least thought that city staff had supported or recommended approval was because of an understanding how the OMB worked and how they were likely to rule. So it was seen as a better option to have it approved with some of the amendments based on the fact that, again, this was going to go ahead of the OMB instead of the LPAT. So do you think maybe it's possible that staff's decision might have been different if it was, you know, already, if we were under the LPAT system instead of the OMB?
You know, that's a good question. I mean, I have Garrett Stevenson, who's the planner on this file, has reached out to me. I was away at a family wedding last week, so he reached out to me and said, you know, let's talk about this. I don't know that their decision or their recommendation would have been different. I mean, he put in some interesting amendments, and that was the lodging house licensing for this development, which is very unique to the development, and that was an effort by our staff to affect some kind of a change or some kind of control mechanism, and that we would be able to go and inspect. But as the chair of the appeal board noted, she didn't think that was enough, and that neither did the residents. They did not feel confident that that would be enough to monitor and the behavior of 175 students on this tiny, small piece of property.
Yeah, absolutely. And another thing, you know, I mentioned in the introduction that, you know, student housing, you know, is an issue in that area, in the Lower Dune area, similar to it was, you know, several years ago in the Laurier area, where it was more, you know, converted single family homes that got converted into student housing. And there was obviously transition problems in Waterloo and that's happening. It seems to be something similar, if not as quite a large scale, going on in that area. Is there some things that need to be done to make the area a little better for, well, one, for students living in the area, and also then to make things better for neighbors who are, you know, tired of seeing a single family house converted into a student house, which, you know, typically deteriorates in value once that happens.
Right. I think that there have been some things happening, some planning decisions around some changes. We are going to be doing a full review of the Lower Dune Conestoga College area through our planning staff in the coming year. The new student housing that Drew Lowe built on Old Carriage has taken quite a significant number of students out of those converted houses. So we being the neighborhood and myself, have noticed that there has been an increase in vacancy, which I think is going to be hard for some of those landlords to make it reasonable to keep those houses. What we're hoping, I think, is that should another building, possibly across Homer Watson, near the Tim Hortons McDonald's, be built, that would definitely help with the converted houses. I would love to see what has happened in Waterloo, where the houses slowly start to return back to single-family houses. And even if some houses remain as duplexes where, you know, two families can live in there, I think that would be wonderful. And Ian Cook Homes have also gone ahead and built a townhouse development on the corner of Pinnacle and Dune Valley, and that was accepted by the community. So housing stock that welcomes families, you know, people who might be downsizing, that's the kind of infill we want to see in Lower Dune.
Yeah, and you know, the student population is obviously high, but the student population who are living near the area and not commuting isn't quite the same as we have with the university. So it is likely, right, as you say, another one more potentially, you know, large student-oriented apartment complex could be enough to, you know, obviously soak up a lot of that from the area. So interesting perspective and great conversation. Yvonne, thanks for taking the time to join me this morning.
You're welcome. Thanks so much for raising this issue. I think it's important that we make sure that we have safe and affordable housing for our students, but that we also have we keep the integrity of neighborhoods.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a delicate balance, but I think it looks like we're on a little better path to finding that balance.
Exactly. Well, thank you, Jeff.
Yep.
Have a good day.
Absolutely. You as well. Thanks again to Yvonne Fernandez, Ward 4 counselor in the city of Kitchener. It is, as mentioned, that kind of delicate balance to walk when there is, you know, development projects that technically fit with this project did, technically fit with the city's plan to increase density in areas that can increase density, but to still, you know, fit with the neighborhood in 175 bedrooms. And again, as Yvonne spoke about there, a rather small piece of land just didn't fit. And council, which, you know, we've seen in recent years and certainly in recent months, are willing to if go ahead with certain development projects that are larger than neighbors would like it to be, but they are able to, you know, find some common ground or somewhere close to common ground and move ahead. But this one, they just said flat out no, which is something we don't see that often. So in this case, certainly they were willing to do it and, you know, hopefully look for better situations to find student housing in that Lower Dune Conestoga area. It's just a problem that's moving around. It goes from Waterloo, moves to South Kitchener, just anywhere where our post-secondary education institutions are. There's bound to be some of these housing issues, but it looks like we might find our way out of it. Okay, I'm going to take a quick break. When we come back, I want to talk a little bit more about education. This morning, we found out that $100 million that was supposed to go to helping repair Ontario schools is no longer there. It's gone. See ya. The cap and trade's cut. And hey, guess what? Some of that money from cap and trade went to fixing up our schools. I want to chat about that when we get back from the break right after this.
Traffic. It's the last thing you want to see on your commute. The best way to avoid it? 570 News Airborne Traffic Reports with Daryl Dahmer. Get the most accurate reports for your commute with 570 News, your local source for airborne traffic.
We are back. This is the Jennifer Campbell Show. I am not Jennifer Campbell. Jeff Pickle here, filling in for Jennifer for this week. Got me for three more days. I'm happy to be here. Love getting a chance to come down to the Talk Studios and fill in for an hour. It's a fun time. I'm happy to be here. Thank you to Yvonne Fernandez, Ward 4 Councillor for City of Kitchener, chatting about the Lower Dune development project. Got the axe from City Council. Also from the Local Planning Appeals Tribunal. That took the place of the OMB. And the OMB essentially just always sided with the developer. I know I'm wrong on that. Clearly, they don't always, but they were heavily pro-development. And when this was originally up for conversation at City Council, when the OMB was still a thing, and then the OMB wasn't a thing, and it was changed, fairly drastically changed in the way it operates, and now something that may have very likely passed through the OMB, doesn't pass through the LPAT, the tribunal. So thank you to Yvonne for chatting with me about that. I want to talk to you now about a story I was working on this morning. It was in the news run for 570 News this morning. I think we're going to hear a lot more about it through the day. I think Mike will also be talking about this on his show a little bit later on in the program. But Ontario's new Tory government canceling a $100 million fund that was earmarked for school repairs this year. The cut comes as a result of Doug Ford's campaign promise to scrap the province's cap and trade system. So when that promise was made, and a lot of people were behind it, a lot of people not fans of the cap and trade program, then cut it. Great. A lot of savings. I don't think many people, myself included, realize that would mean cuts to school repairs. It's a program that was certainly running last year. I think last year might have been the first year that was running the Greenhouse Gas Reduction Fund, which has now been eliminated, offered up $100 million to schools across the province to make greenhouse gas reductions, making schools more energy efficient, reducing emissions, millions of dollars. For the Waterloo Region District School Board, that's $1.6 million was allocated for that greenhouse gas reduction fund. That's $1.6 million in repairs. Mind you, they are specific repairs that need to go towards the school's reduction of greenhouse gases, but that's $1.6 million less for them to spend on some of those repairs. In total, the public school board had $14 million to spend on repair projects, including that $1.6 million from the greenhouse gas reduction fund. That meaning a 9% loss of the overall budget when it comes to making repairs at schools. That's a huge number. For the Catholic board, it was somewhere similar. The number wasn't exact as 1.6. The greenhouse gas reduction fund was looped together in the information I found with another fund that's typically a smaller fund. It was a combined fund of $1.4 million, but still, understandably, a large amount of money no longer there. That was initially supposed to be part of school repair. So I think there's some unintended consequences emerging from the idea to scrap the cap and trade program that certainly many of us didn't see. the total amount, which is a pretty remarkable number. I need to find it here now. There's 4,900 publicly funded schools in the province. The repair backlog is at $15 billion. We're $15 billion behind where we need to be in repairing our schools, nearly 5,000 of them, and now $100 billion more is cut away from that ability to repair the schools. I have a feeling that's going to upset a number of people. We might talk about that a little bit later on in the show, but for now, we're going to have to go to a break. When we come back, organic milk. Do you buy organic milk? Do you believe in that it's a better, more pure form, that drinking organic milk will make you healthier, maybe a better person? Well, a new study says you're wrong. Dead wrong. It's the exact same as regular milk, you fools. Okay, we're going to chat about that. That's coming up right after the break. We got the news, and then we'll be back with this Toronto Star report about the lie that is organic milk.
With all the technology at our disposal, it's a shame that most of it is wasted on nonsense. Download the 570 News app at 570news.com and stay informed.
We're back with the Jennifer Campbell Show. Jeff Pickle here, filling in for you. Thank you. If you're tuning in on Rogers Cable 20, appreciate it. Of course, if you're listening in on 570 News, happy to have you along. Great show so far, because it's a great day. And I'm not joking about that. All 12 of the young Thai soccer players, the team named the Wild Boars. The Wild Boars have been rescued, and their coach. It's a great day for everyone. One of those rare happy news days. Remember where you were. July 10th, 2018. We're going to continue with the show. I love this story. I love everything about this story. Next time you take a trip to the grocery store and you're taking a look at the price of milk, just regular everyday milk, and then if you're brave, and maybe you have a special section for the organic stuff, or maybe the organic milk is sitting there right beside the, you know, everyday pedestrian ordinary milk, take a look at the price. I'll save you the trip. The organic stuff is higher. It's up to double the price of regular milk at times. Why is that? Well, it must be better, right? It must be more pure, better for you, make you a better person, make you better looking. Well, according to a new study, you are wrong. The Toronto Star investigated organic milk in Ontario, tracking it from cow to carton, and found that the product is no different than your cheap, regular, everyday milk. The nutritional content, the levels of pesticides and metals and heart-healthy fats are the exact same. So what's the deal? How are we being tricked by organic milk? One of the authors of this investigative report, Michelle Henry with the Toronto Star, is joining me now. Michelle, thanks so much for taking the time to join me.
Hi, thanks. No problem. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. I love this study. I grew up in a rural community, have lots of farming background, so I often hear different sides of organic farming and this type of conversation about whether or not there's anything different or whether it is just all a marketing ploy. Why did you decide to take up this specific investigation into organic milk?
I mean, I think I decided to look into it because I was curious, a long time ago about what it means to be organic and why, we pay so much more for it. And, I wanted to know if the carton of milk that I'm reaching for on the shelf, at much more than the cost of regular milk, I wanted to know if it had hormones or antibiotics or pesticides and stuff like that, because I think those were things that I thought were in regular milk, and that's why I was buying organic milk. So I decided to sort of look into it.
And I talked a little bit about what some of those findings were, but maybe you can go into a little bit more. Is it as plain as that, that there is no difference between regular milk and organic milk? What were some of the findings you made?
You know, I think the main thing that we found is that, you know, the milks are the same in terms of, like, the safety of the milks and the nutrition of the milks. You know, there's no pesticides in any milk. There are no antibiotics in any milk because it's illegal to have antibiotics in milk in Canada. And all milk that we drink in Canada, all fluid milk is produced in Canada. And, you know, in terms of hormones, well, all milk has hormones. You know, that's something that I didn't understand before. But there's no added growth hormones in any milk in Canada because that's illegal too. So, you know, from a food safety perspective, both milks are the same. And then from a nutritional perspective, we found that, you know, there's sort of the same amounts of heart-healthy fats in both of the milks, organic and conventional. Of course, we tested the milk in the winter. And, you know, in the winter, this was also sort of revelatory to me, that no cows, really organic or conventional, are going outside to graze because there's no grass growing on the ground in the winter.
Very good point.
I mean, so, you know, I for some reason, that just didn't occur to me before until I saw it on the farms.
Michelle, it reminds me of, again, knowing this, and something that always bothered me when people would talk about the, you know, kind of like now the myth of organic milk, the myth of cow tipping, where people always thought you could tip cows. And it's like, if you've ever been out there, you know that cows don't sleep standing up. So it's kind of the same thing. It's like they're not grazing in the winter because there's no grass. But it's one of those, you're right. It's kind of a thing that when you look at it, it makes a lot of sense. And I know one of the things that you pointed out in the article, which is pretty illuminating, is some of the things that classify something as being organic milk. And it might not quite be up to the standard, which we think a lot of cows, as you mentioned, in a beautiful grassy pasture with just pure food. It's not quite the way that works.
Right. I mean, there's a lot of misperceptions, you know, kind of swirling around, you know, milk. And I think that that's sort of one of them. I mean, that we only have, you know, pasture in the summer. But also, you know, I think that people feel that organic cows must be better taken care of and stuff like that. And when I went on these farms, I found that every dairy farmer that I met, both organic and conventional, loved their cows just as much and treated them just as well. Though, you know, they all had different methods of managing their cows, but all of the cows seem to be well treated, I think, out of recognition that not only when you have a herd of cows, you kind of get to love them because you're spending so much time with them, but you also realize that if you don't treat them well, if they're sick, and if they're not happy, if they're stressed, they don't give you good quality milk, and then you can't make any money off them.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's sort of... seeing the farms sort of, you know, did a lot to sort of temper my perceptions of what was going on. And it was nice to see that every farmer, both conventional and organic, they had different methods, but they loved their cows equally as much.
Yeah, no, absolutely. That is obviously good to hear. And I'm curious, what do the conventional, so the non-organic milk producers, what are they, did you ask them at all what they think about organic milk? Were they, you know, maybe a little bit more aware that it might not quite be all that some of the consumers think it is?
Yeah, I mean, I think that, I think that sort of in agriculture, well, agriculture in general, I mean, I can only sort of speak to the dairy, you know, to the dairy farmers that I met, but they talk a lot about, all of them, conventional and organic, they talk a lot about consumer perception. And they're like, we don't know what the customers want. We don't know what the consumers want. And they sort of, you know, try to hear what consumers want and try to give it to them, you know, organic or grass-fed or this or this or that or that. And I think, you know, conventional and organic farmers alike are both sort of baffled about, you know, how do we sell our product to the very finicky consumer who's, you know, really disconnected, I think, and I'm, you know, speaking for myself here, who's really, you know, disconnected living in a city from the way our food is made. And so I think, you know, in terms of the conventional farmers were saying, you know, one conventional farmer in particular, you know, I mean, they only know about their product. So the conventional farmers really only knew about their, you know, how they make their product and what they do. They didn't really know about the, you know, the organic standards. But I think they had this real feeling that how could it possibly be that different,
Given
that they're all sort of doing the same things. But I don't want to kind of speak for any of them. We just had sort of casual conversations about it.
Absolutely. And you also spoke with that, as you mentioned, the finicky consumer. What did you hear from them about, you know, the reasons why? I think we talked a little bit about why people buy organic milk, but what did you hear from them? And then was there any conversations you had after you made the revelation to these, you know, longtime organic milk buyers, and any reaction from what you've been able to tell them?
So, you know, they sort of felt the same way that I did at the very beginning of this investigation, that, you know, conventional milk had antibiotics and hormones, and they were worried if there were pesticides in the milk, and, you know, they sort of had the same feelings about it. It must be in the air, sort of the misperception sort of built up over time. And, you know, when I told them, I said, well, would you believe that no antibiotics are allowed in Canada and no growth hormone is allowed? And people were like, I guess, you know, happy to hear that all milk was equally as safe in Canada. But, you know, it's also a little bit shocking when you say that you kind of step back and you go, oh, really? So why have I thought that all this time? It's sort of strange. I remember I was standing outside the Big Carrot, a store, you know, kind of a health food type grocery store on the Danforth. And I was telling people, you know, there can't be any antibiotics, there can't be any hormones. And, you know, I mean, they were happy, but again, like a little bit shocked to sort of hear that.
And I know, and I see some, maybe a little bit more connected to the agricultural community, so to speak, than maybe the average person, certainly someone maybe living in Toronto. But some of the farmers I follow on Twitter, for example, have, you know, aren't huge fans of A&W's marketing talking about their cows and being, you know, antibiotic free and some of the different things they talk about. And I also saw Steam Whistle Brewery also under some particular fire about saying they're GMO free, which when you talk about the kind of, marketing tactics, a lot of the farmers I've heard from say that's, you know, completely just, you know, there's no beer with GMO products in it. It's not something that exists. So it's just kind of almost like a fear mongering is what the term that a lot of these, you know, farmers are using. I don't want to make
It's not, you know, the farmers aren't necessarily doing the marketing.
No, absolutely.
It's sort of an industry thing. You know, I definitely don't want to sort of, you know, pin all of this or, you know, much on the farmers themselves. I mean, I think it's really confusing these days to sort of make sense of all the messages and all the marketing and all the claims out there that are just out there.
Mm-hmm.
But you're right. I mean, like, one of the farmers actually that I spoke to, an organic farmer, he was saying that he went to the grocery store and he saw a bag of grapes that say, you know, non-GMO. And he was like, there's no such thing as GMO grapes.
Yeah, yeah. That was the steam whistle example,
right,
too.
Exactly,
yeah,
exactly. Like what you were saying about the beer. So, I don't know. I think it's very confusing to make. And then, you know, another professor that I spoke to named Tim Caulfield was saying that there's this culture of celebrity. You know, Gwyneth Paltrow is buying organic. And, you know, it's sort of hard. We buy into it because we think it's a good thing because of all the messages that we get from various different places. Yeah. No, it's hard. It's hard to be a consumer, I guess.
It is. And I think this is, you were obviously focused on a specific on dairy. And I think milk is one of those products because it is, a direct animal byproduct that a lot of people are particularly concerned about. But I know, it does. It extends to all of the food we eat and a lot of misconceptions there. So I think it's a great piece. I think it's very illuminating. And I think a lot of people hopefully take a little bit more of a look into, obviously, take your health into your own hands and do everything you can be healthy. But if you're just spending money to spend more money, I think a lot of people are going to try to avoid doing that.
Right. Hopefully.
Absolutely. Well, Michelle, thanks so much for taking the time to chat with me about this this morning.
Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it. Have a wonderful day.
You as well. Michelle Henry, an investigative reporter with the Toronto Star. Really cool piece. And I really, I saw this article, and a few weeks earlier, I saw that about the Steam Whistle Brewery, how they market GMO-free, and like farmers, flipping out. Well, flipping out might be a bit extreme, but unhappy with that marketing ploy because, and I think it's the same as what Michelle said with the grapes. Like, well, there are no GMO grapes. Like, that's just, the farmers using the term, the agricultural community using the term fear-mongering. This is not like, of course, all of the beer is GMO free. So, and I hope I'm not speaking out of turn, but I that was the thrust of the argument being made. So I think there's a lot of really good conversation to have about our food and what we're eating and when you need to be maybe extra careful and try to avoid some of the bad things in our food and when it's just simply marketing. Okay, we have a call here from Ken. Ken, what are your thoughts on what we heard?
Well, my one thought is I agree with what she's saying. I've got family that is in the dairy industry, and one thing I don't hear much of any talk about, like we got the NAFTA negotiations with the United States, and it sounds like her article is pretty much focused on the Canadian, which is true. You can't have any growth hormones or antibiotics in there. However, in the States, it's different. They do use this BST drugs down there, which is a growth hormone in their cows. They're legally allowed to use that. And it's a totally different process. Like in Canada, the cows, they'll have a calf. They milk really good for a while, and then their milk production drops off. So they dry the cow up, and they get her in calf again. She has another calf, and she milks good for a while. In the States, they inject them with this BST drug. And the cow, often they only have one calf, and that cow is injected with these drugs to keep milking at a high production rate until about 3 or 4 years and the cow's done. I'm surprised I know why the Canadian dairy producers can't say much against it, because Monsanto has got all these lawyers hired that would protect to say, oh no, our drug's fine, it's safe. It's perfectly fine. We can inject them with this BST. It's safe. But the Canadian dairy producers, I think, have already been told, if you start bad-mouthing our drug, we will hire our lawyers and go after you, basically. But nobody really talks about that. Like, this idea with NAFTA, Canada would have to somehow market the fact that our milk is, that the growth hormones are not permitted within Canadian milk. And try to promote that fact so people are aware of that. There is a difference.
Now, Ken, that's a great point. I'm glad you brought that up. And that is, another thing adding to the complexity of this issue with our food. Not only the food type is organic, not organic, but, what is the, what country is the origin? Where's it from? That makes a big change as well. Here, we'll go to a call from... You know what? Actually, we better take a break first. And if we can have John hold on the line, we got to take a break. We can come right back and we'll get right to you, John, just after this.
Baseball is too slow, they say.
The bringer of rain.
Try telling that to Josh Donaldson.
Here's the first pitch.
He's got less than a half a second to react to a pitch. Don't miss a single moment of Toronto Blue Jays baseball.
And that ball is gone!
On 570 News.
Unbelievable.
And we're right back here with it, the Jennifer Campbell Show, live on 570 News. Jeff Pickle here filling in. Just before we left, we were chatting about organic milk and a new study by the Toronto Star saying organic milk essentially no different than regular everyday milk The only difference being the price. We have the phone lines open. John has been patiently waiting on the line here. John, sorry to make you wait. What are your thoughts on the topic?
No problem. Thank you very much. I can't really speak to the dairy industry, but I don't doubt that that report is correct. But in relation to what A&W says and the beef cattle industry, I have a very good close friend of mine who and his brother-in-law has an apple orchard. He has a beef farm. But in the beef farm, in the spring, he would put some sort of a steroid or inject it, and back in those days, it was sold to Schneider's. But they could put this steroid into the beef cattle, and basically say, well, we're going to come back and pick this thing up on August the 1st. It'll weigh 800 pounds on that day. And they were right. That was all this controlled growth environment. And the other friend I was going to make reference to is he had an apple orchard. And we would go out there and with our kids and his kids. But when he was spraying the orchard, we all had to go in the house. And he wore, I don't know if you're probably too young to remember the old television program Sea Hunt, he would actually wear the same type of device that they showed in that program, Sea Hunt with Lloyd Bridges, while he was out on the back of this wagon and somebody else pulling him in the tractor and spraying the apple orchard. So as far as organic is concerned, since those days, I've never eaten anything but an organic apple.
Yeah. So
those are my two points. As far as the vegetable and fruit industry is concerned, I would be somewhat concerned feeding them, especially the strawberries out of California. They're just terrible. I would never eat a strawberry from California.
Yeah, I know. I understand what you mean. The ones that are as big as apples, and I understand that. And that's a good point. I think, you know, I think that's what adds to the complexity again. You know, if you see, you know, or is there organic milk? You know, this study is certainly indicating that there's no real discernible difference. But is organic beef? Where's the difference there? Is it a big health difference to be eating one or the other? And it likely is one of those situations where it goes product by product. And John, I just looked up Sea Hunt, and that would be quite an interesting garment to put on to go spray apples. So thank you for turning me on to Sea Hunt now. But I think that was the main point that Michelle Henry with Toronto Star was getting across, is that it makes you wonder now, product by product. Obviously, country of origin is important. Well, those, a lot of people often talked about those California strawberries, again, as big as apples, but they don't really have that same taste because they're just inflated, essentially just inflated big strawberries, but they lose some of that flavor with them. And it is concerning as a consumer, you know. When do I have to be concerned? When should I be reaching for organic if that's something that's important to me? And when does it not matter? I don't buy anything organic. And again, that's, you know, part of that isn't necessarily because I don't believe, you know, maybe organic fruit is not better for you or less, you know, chemicals involved just because I'm cheap and I just buy the food that's there. I don't not buy organic. If I go down to one, like a farmer's market, I certainly, you know, enjoy doing that. But, you know, most of the shopping I go to is just at a grocery store, and I buy food at a grocery store. I know, sounds pretty novel, right? My exciting life, buying regular food at a grocery store. But, you know, that's how I go. And I don't think it's going to affect me. I don't think I'm going to die any sooner because I haven't been eating organic food. I don't know. A lot of other ways to stay healthy and not pay double the price of milk. I'm also developed later in life lactose intolerance, which is a whole other thing. So I haven't actually drank milk in a number of years, and it's been very difficult. It's been a very difficult process. And this, if you go on the Toronto Star and look up this investigative report, it's called Milked, which is great. And they show, there's a lot of imagery and video showing milk, and I've never wanted a glass of milk so bad in the last 8 years than just watching this kind of splash play over and over again. I love that. And, you know, it reminded me of another conversation too with free range chickens. I'm not 100% sure on this, but I know with free range chickens, what makes technically a free range chicken. And I know it's not what you think it is. It's not, you know, chickens running out to pasture, which would be a hilarious sight to see, but it's not what you think it is. It's just having a little bit more space. It's not, you know, they're not living the high life before they're sent off to their ultimate end. It's the organic thing. You definitely take a look, read up on it if you do are someone who goes organic. Okay, that's all the time we've got with me today. I'll be back here tomorrow and the next day and the next day with you all week on the Jennifer Campbell Show. The Mike Farwell Show up next. But for me, that's it. You have yourselves a great day.